Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone, this is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right, every week we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes, so for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody, it's Tim Miller from The Bulwark. I'm welcoming back to the channel Kalen Robertson. I'm sure you know him on YouTube, various social media accounts. He's been covering the war in Ukraine from Kyiv. And last night, Russia was launching hundreds of drones and missiles at Ukraine's biggest cities, including Kyiv, and most notably attacked a monastery, one of the Eastern Christianity's holiest sites. It's a church and a monastery. And the scene from last night was pretty horrific. I was watching Kalen there early in the early hours of the morning. And so I want to play that for you guys, then we'll get him on the other side.
So there's a priest behind me right now. He's trying to save a cross because this building, which is almost 1,000 years old, was hit by Russian missiles. You can see the police officer right behind me is looking out for missiles and drones, which are also coming into the city. I never thought I'd make a video like this, but it's 4 o'clock in the morning here in Ukraine. There are firefighters everywhere trying to put out the flames from a building that is burning right now behind me. And I actually can't believe that I'm witnessing this right now, and everyone is on edge. You know, these firefighters are putting their lives at risk just to try and save this building. So priests here are trying to save artifacts and trying to save things that are sacred as well.
Then some bullets I don't know how to explain it, sorry.
The reason that I came here right now to make this video is to show that this is actually the war that Russia is waging on the civilized world. It's nothing to do with land or territory.
And even though right now it's still super dangerous, I came here for a very specific reason. Look at this. This isn't faith. When Moscow talks about faith, they mean destruction. This is actually what Putin's holy war actually looks like.
All right, Kalen, what'd you see there, and give us an update on what's happening?
Well, it feels like things are getting worse in lots of ways. Russia have decided that they want to be more desperate than they ever have been, and they started to specifically attack places of worship and monasteries, right? And at the exact same time that they bring Andrew Tate, Candace Owens, the far right, the sort of who's who, and pretending that there's the sort of bastions of free speech, the bastions of morality, of Christianity, they are bombing 1,000-year-old churches. Honest to God, I have never seen anything like this in terms of what I saw last night, walking, you know, at 1:30 a.m. to 2 a.m. in the morning, seeing a church literally on fire. It was shocking. And knowing that this is all intentional. And it's because Russia wants to instill as much fear as possible for everyone here living in Ukraine. But I mean, this is like completely flies in the face of everything that they pretend to be, right? Russia pretends to be sort of based in Christian and sort of like a nationalist country. And then they put missiles into literal churches. I mean, I was interviewing priests last night and they were running for their lives and they were holding, you know, crucifixes, trying to save them. And it was like they were trying to save the West in some ways. They were sort of trying to save this history that we have. And this is a UNESCO stated building as well. I mean, this was like unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. It was shocking.
Yeah, Zelensky called the assault on the Lavra one of Russia's most serious crimes against Christian culture to date. The monastery, as you mentioned, dates back 1,000 years. I didn't know this. It houses extensive catacombs where Orthodox saints are buried. Obviously, a missile attacking a church in any situation like this is not a military target. This is not, within, the bounds of war and the international rule of law when it comes to war. But in particular, to go after Lavra, this like historic monastery and church where, they have all these saints and relics. it does seem an intentional assault on Ukrainian culture and history, as well as the Christian church.
Yeah, and right now Russia isn't winning on the front lines. Russia is losing. Russia is humiliated. Russia asked for permission to hold a Victory Day protest that they weren't given, you know, moving forward. They just had to cancel Russia Day. So they're lashing out right now and they're trying to massacre as many people as possible. And it's very obvious here. But also, you know, it really is the opposite of everything that Russia puts out. This was, you know, I'm not religious myself at all. I'm sure that maybe you're not either.
Wait, hey, don't assume. I got my Regis Jesuit cert on. Okay, I went to Jesuit high school. All right, I'm a cradle Catholic. My mother was bringing me to church. It's a little tough for me these days, but you know, you can still have respect.
We both went to church, so we both kind of all understand like the value of what the church represents. But watching the beautiful sort of like gold dome buildings here under threat like they are now on fire is a scene that I never thought possible, is a scene that I never thought would be unfolding in front of my own eyes. But this is what Russia represents now. It represents desperation. You know, Russia is not losing on the battle, is not winning on the battlefield in this country right now. And so they are lashing out and they are trying to terrify everyone here. And this is like really clutching at straws. This is insane. And at the exact same time, again, the fact that they're inviting, you know, the who's who of the far right, pretending that they're very based, pretending that they are sort of like the pinnacle of morality. You know, a moral country does not do what it did last night. Russia is behaving like a country that is demonic, honestly, really. I mean, putting missiles into a church is demonic. Really, it is. And watching a church that's 1,000 years old, older than Moscow, by the way, on fire is really unprecedented. So, and I think we're going to be seeing more of this. Honestly, you know, I've just arrived back here in Ukraine from Ireland, and you know, things are getting worse here in terms of the terrorism from Russia. But I think that they're going to get worse before they get better. I mean, it's just like insane.
Yeah, talk about what else you're seeing, like what is happening on the ground. I mean, again, like I feel like we do this all the time. We check in with you, and you know, it's hard for us in America to kind of follow the day to day of the war and kind of get a sense for what life is like, you know, in the major cities in Ukraine, across Ukraine. Like we were talking to, oh man, I forget who I had on the podcast the other day. They're talking about the progress which Ukraine is making on the battlefield, which you referenced, and like the progress and putting pressure on Russia with the various drone developments and other military advancements. But like that's only one part of the war. The other part is, you know, continuing to have the resolve and continuing to be able to live your life. And like, I'm just wondering kind of what that is like in Kyiv right now.
Well, life is more unpleasant right now in Ukraine, even though Ukraine is winning on the battlefield in lots of ways. It puts Russia in a very difficult position because, again, they're not winning in terms of territory. Russia lost more ground in the last 6 months than they ever have since 2022. And so this is a real turning point, and you can really feel it. But you can also feel it in terms of every day, things are getting more dramatic. There are more missiles entering the city. It was 611 drones last night. It was 61 missiles as well. I mean, this is like, you know, I live right in the top floor of the highest apartment here in Kyiv, and it was incredibly loud. Two of my windows were blown out. You know, it's like, it's really getting to a point of madness, but this is kind of expected in terms of a state that can only be described as desperate right now. So I think that's what Russia is. And Russia feels cornered, right? And that's why they're wheeling out Steve Witkoff. That's why they're wheeling out every single asset they possibly can, because they're clutching at straws. And it's why they're lashing out like they are right now. I mean, this is really like unprecedented. It's shocking.
You mentioned kind of like the hypocrisy is noted. I just think it's worth noting, especially, you know, given that it's, within what the remit of what I'm covering in American politics too, you have these, you know, so-called America First kind of podcasters and pundits, the Candace Owens of the world, the Tuckers. Putin just welcomed many of them, as you mentioned, to Russia. Like one of their big talking points is that, you know, Putin is a defender of traditional Christian values, right? And like you hear a lot on these podcasts about stories of the poor Christians who are being killed by, or like, you know, by the Israelis, or the fact that like the Ukrainians are anti-church and are going after the Russian Orthodox and kicking them out of Ukraine. I feel like what happened last night really kind of lays bare the truth of what Putin is and the lie of like what Candace Owens and Tucker are trying to make him seem like as some defender of traditional Christian values.
Yeah, and again, everything about Russia screams hypocrisy in terms of what it tries to put out into the whole world. You know, Russia claims to be the bastion of Christianity. A Christian country doesn't bomb churches like it did last night. A Christian country also doesn't have the same rates of abuse like Russia has right now in terms of domestic abuse is now through the roof in Russia. Violence is through the roof. Degeneracy is now through the roof. But I mean, this is a country that is putting out the opposite in terms of its values of what it actually represents. It's an insane time. But really, Russia feels right now more desperate than ever. I think what they're doing here in Ukraine, you can really, really, really feel it, is the opposite of every single value that they're pretending to represent. And it's I feel like it's coming to an end. You know, they're trying to recruit soldiers at an unprecedented rate in Moscow, paying them $60,000 as a sign-up fee. Same thing in St. Petersburg. The fact that they invited, you know, Andrew Tate, the fact that they invited every single one of these people to St. Petersburg shows that they are desperate to project an image that they are a roaring bear, that they're successful. And also that they're like a base Christian country, and they're showing that they're the opposite right here.
Everyone knows how important sleep can be. Between work and parenting and everything else in between, it got to the point where I realized that sleeping was pretty much non-negotiable for me. Honestly, it should be for everybody, but I need my 7 to 8 hours or else I am a mess. Sleeping affects everything from energy to mood, and frankly, my work product. It was suffering because I was sleeping poorly. Well, Boll & Branch bedding was designed for that problem, gave me the kind of rest that I needed. From their signature organic cotton sheets, to their plush pillows, to their breathable blankets, and their temperature-regulating comforters, everything that Boll & Branch makes is made to create a bed that truly supports good sleep. And, like I just said, that is essential. It's incredibly soft, it's breathable, and it's built to get better over time. It's the kind of sleep that you don't really compromise on. We just got our Boll & Branch waffle bed blanket, and I kind of love it. It's been awesome. It's great for those hot summer nights in DC where, honestly, it's so muggy, you feel like you can't really sleep comfortably, but you're also a little bit cold late at night. It's the perfect, perfect blanket for a restful night's sleep. Sleep cooler this summer with Boll & Branch during their annual summer event. For a limited time, you can get 20% off site-wide at bollandbranch.com/bulwarktakes with the code BULWARKTAKES. That's Boll & Branch, BOLLANDBRANCH.com/bulwarktakes. Code BULWARKTAKES for your 20% off. 20% off, folks. What a deal. bollandbranch.com/bulwarktakes. Code BULWARKTAKES. Exclusions do apply.
Were there other Ukrainians out last night? I mean, have you spoken to anybody today? As the day goes on, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, how the people of Ukraine can continue to kind of process like these atrocities. And, you know, it has to wear on them over time.
It does wear on people. Honestly, people here are tired and people here are worried. You know, Zelensky put out a video 2 weeks ago and said, please, please, God, listen to the air raid alerts because they should be taken seriously, right? And people are, you know, 9 people died last night here in this city and it's getting incredibly serious. So it's a worrying time. You know, Ukrainians in some way kind of have this gleeful moment knowing that the tide is turning on the front, but they also know that things are going to get darker before they get better on the front lines, and things are going to get pretty ugly, I think, before Russia is balkanized or economically destroyed, which could very well happen. It's a weird time, honestly. It's I've never really seen Ukraine like this before. It's kind of hopeful, but it's kind of scared as well. Really, it's a weird time.
What are you supposed to do when the air raid sirens go off? Like, what are you doing when the air raid sirens go off?
Yeah, I go out and film everything that's happening to show what's going on. But that's not advised, really. You know, a massive missile fragment. I mean, I'll show you. You know, this is... It also, you know, one of the major things that can actually get you killed here is the fact that things like this fall from the sky. This is a huge piece of metal, probably made in Ireland, actually, with the aluminum, that landed on my roof last night, right? This is from Russia fired in. And this caused a huge bang. These things are actually what can really get you killed here. And it's super, super, super dangerous. But there's a lot of stuff.
So you went up to the roof to grab that?
Yeah. I heard a massive bang and then saw this land. But this is kind of what the threat is here as well. It's fragments landing on your head and things like this. I mean, it's really, it's really quite appalling. I mean, this looks also like kind of like Soviet era. You know, if you look at the cabling, the wires, it's kind of old school, but it's also quite dark and quite ugly in the way that it's built and designed. I mean, these things are really kind of appalling, but it shows that this is kind of the real risk that people have to live with. And there are people here with children, you know, in prams. I just watched people going to primary school, you know, and this stuff is what's landing from the sky. It's insane.
I'm sorry to be a stand-in for your mother here, but shouldn't you be going to a bunker rather than onto the roof when missiles are firing into
I guess Kyiv? So, but I also want to show people what's actually happening here. I want to show what Russia is really doing. And I want to show the fact that this is indiscriminate evil against civilians every single day. And Russia doesn't like people with phones going out and filming the aftermath of the strikes that they organize. And I want to be one of those people that shows the world what's happening. So, you know, yes, it's super dangerous. My mom is very annoyed at me for doing this. But it's worth it because people should know what's happening here. I mean, this is a war crime on an hourly basis.
I recall now who I was talking to about the Ukrainian advancements in the war, Roseanne Applebaum, who had the great article about it in The Atlantic, and she was on the podcast last week. We were also talking about your reporting in Ireland about how, despite the increasing concern about Russian aggression from the EU and the increasing, you know, we've seen, I think, resolve from other European countries in supporting Ukraine. Like, there still are these weird examples where European countries are funding Russia through various companies, be it oil, natural gas, or what you were talking about in Ireland, which is steel. So talk to us about the reporting you're doing and what you saw in Ireland.
I mean, this is one of the most depressing reports I've ever made in my whole life. You know, I normally go to Ireland to visit my mom and maybe have an uncomfortable conversation with a relative about my life choices, right? This is like a place to escape war. But war has reached Ireland because since the full-scale invasion, exports of alumina, which is the white powder that makes aluminum a fundamental part of war, have increased dramatically. And that's because there's a refinery that's owned on the west coast of Ireland, the last place you'd ever expect to see Russian language or Russian words. And they are supplying Russia with a huge amount of raw material that's needed for this war. And so I decided to arrive to, you know, highlight this, to expose this, to really make a huge scene about this. And it was incredibly depressing, honestly, like as an Irish person, knowing the fact that Russia can't win this war alone. Russia needs friends and needs allies, and it has them in its supply chain in places like Ireland. And, you know, Ireland does a great amount of talk right now about help for Ukraine, about supporting Ukraine, about how many refugees they've taken. But every single month, 14 ships leave an estuary in the West Coast to St. Petersburg directly. And there's no excusing it. And every single politician that I spoke to directly about this had no answers as to why this was happening, because they were all paid off. They were happy to sort of only support Ukraine in name only. And it was honestly shocking to see. I mean, really, as an Irish person, it was one of the most humiliating things I've ever had to report on, you know.
It was amazing to me when I was watching it, like how unapologetic the local politicians were and the people involved in the facility were. Like, you would have thought that there'd at least be some shame about it.
No, because there isn't that much political pressure to stop what Russia's doing. So Irish people, Irish politicians, ministers are fairly happy to support what's going on. Look, there's lots of hypocrisy about Israel as well, right? You know, Ireland was very anti-Israel. I don't take a huge position on that. I was just highlighting what's going on.
Well, it just was interesting. Yeah, like, regardless of what your view is on Israel's behavior, and I think there's appropriate reasons to protest Israel and you know, the appropriate reasons to have views about BDS. But like, to sit there and say, okay, no, we have to take a hard line on not supporting any Israeli products because of because of how they're prosecuting the war in Gaza, and then to simultaneously say, hey, we're sending equipment back, or we're sending material back to Russia that is being used to firebomb Kyiv. I think it's fair to point out the hypocrisy there.
Oh, totally. Yeah, completely as well. Also, there's a slight issue in Ireland where sort of criticism of Israel becomes quite anti-Semitic as well, right? It becomes about Jewish people. And like, it feels uncomfortable. And it's an uncomfortable thing that happens in Ireland. And I really don't agree with it. So it's like a huge issue. But also, you know, Ireland likes to pride itself on being politically neutral, right? But they're not politically neutral at all, because they are exporting the raw material for weapons every single 2 days on ships to St. Petersburg. And they did this during World War II as well. You know, this is like outrageous to say as an Irish person. No one likes to say this as an Irish person. But actually, you know, the ambassador to Ireland back in the 1930s was kind of pro-Hitler. And in some ways, Ireland likes to pride itself on being neutral about these issues. But we're happy to watch the rise of fascism in Europe rise overwhelmingly, and are now happy to facilitate the exact same thing. And again, a lot of Irish people don't want to talk about this. It's very uncomfortable, but it should be talked about. It's real, and it's kind of fucked up, really.
Well, it's important to be talked about because people get into this place of inertia, right? There's a lot of things happening in people's lives. You know, they just go about their daily lives. And if no one is forcing them to have to look at what they're being a participant in, then it's never going to stop, you know? And so that's why I think it's important for you to do what you were doing in Ireland, which is just to say, okay, well, who knows what will happen going forward? But like the first step to getting change is forcing people to understand that they are complicit, and no matter whether that's fully intentionally or not, in Russia's war of aggression in Ukraine.
Well, that's a nice point. I mean, it feels good. Like for me, the most important thing that you can possibly do as a journalist is to pick up a microscope or a magnifying glass and highlight something that's happening. And I think that's exactly what I wanted to do in Ireland. You know, my goal wasn't to change policy or to really have a huge global impact. It was to show the world what is going on. And that's the best thing about journalism, right? And love it or hate it, that's kind of what we did in Ireland.
Well, stay safe, brother. It's Caelan Robertson. You can find him on YouTube and on everywhere else. We'll put the links here in the comments, and keep in touch. All right, brother?
I will. Okay, cool. It was lovely chatting.
All right, we'll see you soon.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.